Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
And welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Today, we're going to be talking to Pammy Price about getting to know your woodlands. You have woods on your property, don't you, Jean?
I have about an acre of misguided woods.
It's not misguided. I've been there. It's beautiful. And I have some woods, too. But a lot of people in the state own just tons and tons of acreage. In fact, Pammy tells us that in the interview that half of the woodland in New York State is owned privately, which I was really interested in. It's kind of surprising to me.
And Pammy tells us there's clues in your woodland about past use of land, walls and old trees, and changes in topography. There's a book called Forest Forensics by Tom Wessels, and he teaches a class in, I think it's Vermont, about going through your woods and figuring out what the weather had been over decades.
Yeah, I'd seen some of his webinars, and really that's kind of where Pammy's coming from, is she's really talking about really starting to understand, if you own woodland, how to be a good steward of it, and talks about how to make a stewardship plan.
And what's an MFO?
MFO is a master forest owner, and that's another volunteer group that Cornell has, and you can take training and really help people in making stewardship plans for their woodlands, whether you want to do harvesting of lumber, whether you want to attract wildlife. It's a really good program. I've taken it.
Pammy's very involved in it.
Yeah, and she's going to tell us all about it. So I think that's going to be a really good interview.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And Heidi Bach is back with Trekking the Trail. She's going to talk about the Ooms Conservation Area in Chatham. It's an amazing place. Have you been there?
No, but I know that it's got a lake and you can go fishing there.
It does. It does. You can go fishing.
They tell you how to get a fishing license if you don't have one on their website.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It also is an amazing place for grassland birds like bobolinks and eastern meadowlarks. It's an amazing birdwatching place. It's a beautiful trail, and I think that's really a good one to listen to.
Well, I always wondered what an Ooms was.
What is an Ooms?
People keep talking about the Ooms Conservation Area.
Yes.
It's in Chatham.
Yes.
And I keep hearing people talking about it, and I keep looking, and I keep waiting. It's the name of the people who migrated here from Holland and started a dairy farm and sold this acreage to the Nature Conservancy. So now we all know what an Ooms is. We're also doing a little chat on It's All Greek to Me, and we're talking about binomial nomenclature.
Binomial nomenclature. Wow. Yeah. What is binomial nomenclature?
It's a tongue twister.
It is. It is.
It means, literally translated, it means two-name naming.
Two-name naming. It's really about Latin names of plants, right?
Yeah. So if your name is Tim Kennelty, a Rosa Rugosa would be a Rugosa Rosa. So it's like family name and individual's name.
Okay. Well, that's going to be really interesting. And the Latin names are really important because common names, usually there's a couple common names for a plant, and a lot of times you get a lot of confusion if you use common names. So that's why we're doing binomial nomenclature,
right? That's right, because a rose is a rose is a rose.
I can't wait to hear you talk about this.
You're going to love it.
Sounds like a lot to listen to in this episode. Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our topic today is Know Your Woodlands, and we have Pamela Price as our guest. Pammy, could you fill us in on your background and, of course, your title as well?
Hi, Tim. Thanks for inviting me to be part of the program. First of all, my title at CCE Columbia Greene is Environment and Natural Resources Program Coordinator, and I am the regional director of the New York Master Forest Owner Program for the Catskill Lower Hudson region, covering the counties of Columbia, Delaware, Dutchess, Green, Orange, Otsego, Putnam, Rockland, Schoharie, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester. I'm a certified wildlife biologist with an MED in environmental education from Bard Center for Environmental Policy and a BT in wildlife management from SUNY Cobleskill. The tools I use to enhance educational opportunities for everyone include place-based and inquiry-based teaching, curriculum development, and educational approaches that are mindful of access and inclusion for all. I combine my myriad of skills to engage with community members and share my nature knowledge with them. I like to teach about the health benefits of nature and the ways it helps to create community connections and use citizen science in my education programs, having gained knowledge and insight into the practice of citizen science through being an active member of the Citizen Science Association. I'm also a member of the New York State Outdoor Education Association, where I'm an active member of the Equity, Access, and Inclusion Committee. I'm a member of the national and state chapters of the Wildlife Society, and I'm a board member of the Hudson Center for Community and Environment. Prior to joining the team at Cornell Cooperative Extension Columbia Green, I was the Education Program Coordinator at Columbia County Soil and Water Conservation District, where I was responsible for education and awareness programs, nature interpretation, and brochure and exhibit development. Previously, I worked as a natural resources specialist, where my duties included performing natural resource inventories and assessments, wetland assessments and delineations, and threatened and endangered species work.
Let's start small. Those of us who own woodlands or woodlots don't always look at them as a resource. I have about an acre of woods on my property, and frankly, I have no idea if they're healthy, if I should try to improve their health, or if such a small wooded area makes a difference in the ecosystem. One of the things you discuss is being present on your land and observing through the seasons. Could you expand on that? I know it's a lot to ask for the first question.
Sure. I always say, think big picture. Survival of every species depends on interactions with other species and the ecosystem services resulting from those interactions. More than half of the woodland in New York State are privately owned by people just like you. Woodlands are essential for people, communities, and society. Woodland owners can be active with trail building, boundary line maintenance, firewood cutting, wildlife habitat improvement, timber harvesting, and more. However, less than 10% of owners have a written plan to describe their resource, identify their opportunities, and set priorities for their effort. Deliberate actions are necessary to optimize your benefits from your woods. How can forest owners help? You can learn to identify the trees, shrubs, and herbaceous plants in your woodlands and try to conserve native trees and plants. Learn to recognize invasive or interfering species and take steps to manage and control their spread and reduce impacts on native species. You can also work on reducing fragmentation. Worldwide biodiversity is declining, so private landowners are key to protecting and enhancing biodiversity.
Yeah, so I have some woodlands on my property, and I'm just wondering, what if I'm walking around out there and I find some kind of strange objects or mysterious anomalies like foundations or sections of abandoned trails or piles of glass and metal? Where would I go to find out, like, what's going on with this? Does this indicate something about the history of my property?
That's all about forest forensics. There are many clues in the forest that can tell us about the past uses of the land. Some of these clues are obvious, while others are more hidden or cryptic. The forests we see today have been influenced in many ways by what has happened in the past, and clues to whether those unique features and mysterious anomalies you are seeing are natural or human-caused can be found if you know how to look at them. Using clues hidden in the landscape, a stone wall, old trees, or topography, it's often possible to figure out what a patch of forest used to look like 100 years ago.
Okay, Pammy, what are some of the clues?
For example, if you find stone walls, it can be a sure sign that the forest was once a pasture or cultivated field. Since deforestation had greatly depleted wood stocks, farmers were forced to build fences from field stones. Another thing you might find is wolf trees, which are also called pasture trees. They're easiest to spot in winter. Look for an old, large tree with thick limbs growing lower on the trunk. Wolf trees are evidence that the forest was once a livestock pasture. Farmers would leave trees in livestock fields to provide shade for the animals. If you find raised earthwork banks, often accompanied by a ditch, it may be a clue to how a wood was once divided up between different landowners. You might also find low-level walls between tree trunks. These may be the remains of old field boundaries, meaning that the wood was once pasture or agricultural land. Further clues may be present in undulating ground known as ridge and furrow, which was created by plows pulled turning soil to one side, making long, low banks. Clues to previous industrial sites include remains of stone buildings, cobbled or paved trackways, piles of spoil or slag, and abandoned machinery. Undulating or pitted ground may also be evidence of quarrying.
I hear a lot about historic storms. What's the story there?
If you find a fallen tree in the woods, you can figure out what type of storm felled it, unless it was caused by a tornado, which fells trees in all directions. In New England, the direction of the wind is highly seasonal. In spring and summer, the strongest winds are generated by thunderstorms from the west, so the fallen trees will point east. These spring and summer storms also create microbursts, or downward drafts of air that topple trees in a clear semicircle, pointing from northeast to southeast. A tree pointing towards the south or west indicates it was felled by a nor'easter storm, whose winds come from the northeast, and down trees pointing northwest were downed by a hurricane. Massive lone boulders in the forest are called glacial erratics, and they're evidence of New England's icy past. The Laurentide ice sheet reached its maximum extent about 18,000 years ago, after which the glaciers slowly receded. As these glaciers flowed slowly downhill, they carved off huge chunks from the underlying bedrock and moved them many hundreds of miles. During this journey, the boulders became rounder and smoother, much like river stone. You can also see other signs of glaciers in the forest. If you find a patch of smooth, exposed bedrock, look for parallel grooves in the rock face. Both the smooth surface of the rock and these marks are evidence of a glacier.